Hey, I'm Eric Tornberg. Welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Sarah Tavel. Sarah is a new partner at Greylock, previously ran product at Pinterest, and is one of my favorite investors in the Valley. We talk about her story at Pinterest, why she joined, how it scaled, how she transitioned from product manager to VC. We talk about career advice, when to join a company, when to move on, how to identify a rocket ship. And we talk about investing and how to get good at it. This is a fantastic episode, and I think you'll enjoy it. All right, here's Sarah. Why did Pinterest make you say yes?
Yeah. It's a great question. So I think like the key was that I was never, you know, people say that like for career decisions, like it's about running towards something, not running away from something. And for me at Bessemer, like I was just really happy. Like, you know, you're always learning, like it's challenging. Like I was working with this incredible person, Jeremy Levine. So I was just, you know, being mentored to be like a great VC. And there were definitely companies that came around who that we invested in or that I got to know that would try, you know, that would start to get to know me and be like, hey, like, do you ever think about being on the other side? But for me, like, I wanted to, like, there was something in me that always wanted to be part of a company. But there was never a company that I just felt as much of a fit with and as excited about as it was for Pinterest. And so what happened is like, you know, it was like every year I was just like, oh, well, that was another year at Bessemer. Like that was great. I learned this. And then it was Pinterest that finally got me to be like, wow, like number one, I love the product. Like from the very beginning, that's what I saw in the company was that I was just totally in love with the product. And then what happened is I got time with the team. I was like, one, incredibly impressed by Ben and the founders, and two, the culture of the company. And I just realized there was so much I could do on the inside that it got me to make the jump.
What did you see in Pinterest, or why did other people miss Pinterest?
It's a tricky question to answer. So I think that when there are a lot of the same people looking at companies, and what I mean by that is like, look, I was a different person. Like I was one of the few female VCs that were out there looking at consumer companies. And when you have a lot of the same people looking at companies, you often reach the same decision. But so look, like with Pinterest, I think that like there was just something for me that clicked in the product that didn't click for other people. And you could call it, you know, you could call it all types of things. You could say it's gender. I actually think that a big part of it was having a prepared mind. So for me, like I had spent a lot of time in e-commerce. I was working with a company called diapers.com. Bessemer was an investor, a couple other companies in the space. And then also was always looking at social, like what were the new and emerging communities that were coming up. And the one that like what always struck me was that there was no community that was kind of like that overlap of commerce and social. There was nothing that you could find where there were people talking about objects or, you know, things. And so when I saw Pinterest, like that was the first time where I was just like, oh my God, here's a company that is doing something in this space that I was quite excited about. And there were a couple other companies that I saw. There was Supply, there was the Fancy, but I felt like Pinterest was the only one that really figured out what the product instantiation should be to go after this opportunity. And so I think having that prepared mind really actually made me see the opportunity in Pinterest that maybe other people missed.
And before digging into Pinterest, I've heard you know, VCs talk about how they, you know, the advice that they get is to build expertise in a subject area. Why did you pick e-commerce, or was it just natural?
You know, actually, what happened is that there was another colleague of mine who was starting to dig into e-commerce, and what we were just seeing is that we would talk to all these companies and they were just crushing it. Like there were so many companies in the e-commerce space that were just growing really quickly. And when you see that, it makes you like really think, gosh, there's gotta be something here.
Let's get back into Pinterest. Okay, you developed this e-commerce experience. You're going to Pinterest. You see it for reasons that other people don't, you know, potentially it has something to do with gender, also to maybe something to do with, like, it just wasn't hyped in the valley. Yeah, it wasn't hyped in the valley as much as, like, other things are, because the valley wasn't maybe the core users of it. When you think of Pinterest, and you were there, you know, a lot of the scaling time, like, take us through what it's like to be at a hyper growth, hyper scaling company, and how your role, you know, has evolved over time.
Yeah. Well, I gotta say, it's, you know, if you're aligned with the culture and you're aligned with the leadership, there's like no better experience to have. You know, like when I joined Pinterest, I remember like it was basically all engineers, designers, a couple people on the community side. And so I was really one of the first people who wasn't like a builder necessarily. Like I wasn't someone who could like go into the code and build. And I kind of like, when I talked to Ben about my job, I was like, well, what, like, what do you want me to even do? Like, I'm really excited. I want to do this, but like, what's my job going to be? And he was kind of like, you know, it's like, you're going to be a utility player. I have a lot of challenges. I need someone who's smart to kind of come in, put structure around the problem, solve it, and move on to the next problem. And so like, you know, that was my job in the beginning. And it's funny, like my title was like, I, you know, stupidly tried to negotiate my title, but it ended up just being like business specialist. So it was like the lowest rung of the ladder. Like I was like a VP at a venture firm, and I was coming in as like this business specialist role. But it's like that, that advice that Eric gave Sheryl Sandberg, like, if you get a seat, don't ask what seat, just get on the rocket ship. And that's like exactly what happened to me. So, you know, the amazing thing about being in a hyper growth company is that there are so often, there are so many problems and so many things that we need someone to do that like all the time, you're just like, oh shit, someone like, who's going to product manage this? Because like, we clearly need a product manager. It's like, you look around the room and you're like, who's going to do it? And it's like, all right, Sarah, you do this. And you know, and like, that's what happens. And so, you know, I was someone like, I remember when I called Ben and asked for a job, I kind of pitched myself as a BD person because I felt like that was the only skill I had from venture capital that was transferable into a company. But in my heart of hearts, I wanted to do product. Like that's what I wanted to do. And I was just lucky that because we were growing so quickly and I understood the product, that an opportunity came around where I could like, hey, someone needs to do like localize the product. Oh, okay, I'll do that. Oh, great. Hey, we're thinking about private boards. Can you do that? Like, oh yeah, that was like my first product thing. And then like the engineer who was leading search, and we had no PMs on search, was like, hey Sarah, can you be our product manager? And so like before I knew it, like I had become a product manager. And like that type of stuff, like, you know, you would think of search as like this, the most technical team at Pinterest, and it probably was outside of most technical product team, I should say. And here I was, a philosophy major, taking that job. Like again, would never get hired from the outside to do the job. But when you're on the inside and you're building the relationships and you like know the product and you know everybody, and you have like that trust and credibility, you just get opportunities that you're in no way qualified to do. And that's what happened to me through my time at Pinterest. And so, you know, by the end of my time at Pinterest, like I had done a few acquisitions. I was leading, you know, four teams on the product end, all on the discovery side. I had closed our Series C financing, which was $100 million financing. Like, I just got to do all these things that I only would have gotten to do if I was at a company that was growing as quickly as Pinterest was.
And you did corp dev. You acquired a few companies.
Yeah, that's
too.
Right.
Is that less fun than VC? Is it more fun?
That's like a good question. So I think it's less fun than VC. So corp dev is kind of like doing VC within a company. And when you're doing corp dev within a company, so I took a bit of a detour. Like at one point they were looking for someone to lead corp dev at Pinterest. And I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe that's what I should do. Like that's what I'm actually qualified to do. So I started to do it. And what I ended up feeling like was It's a lot of fun because instead of having to, like, if I try to do a deal, like, Eric, if I want to invest in Product Hunt, I'd have to convince you on why you should have me as your board member and like why, and like Greylock, but really it's about me. But when you're at a company, you get to sell your company. Like, so I get to say, Eric, like you and Product Hunt should really join Pinterest. These are the reasons. And because I was so passionate about Pinterest, I really loved doing that. But I also felt like corp dev was kind of on the outside. Like when you think about where are the big decisions getting made in the company, like how are we just determining the strategy? At least at that stage at Pinterest, corp dev was kind of on the outside. It was more like I was trying to figure out other people's strategy and then enable that strategy, which to me felt not as much fun, which is why I moved back into product. But when you're on the outside, when you're in venture, you are much more core. Like what you're doing is kind of, you're determining your own strategy. Like you're almost more like your own startup. And so I find venture to be more fun that way.
And you talked about, or this with me, the product being a great kind of entryway into venture in terms of like the skills you gain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I think like Eric and I were talking and I had told him about why I thought being a product manager was actually a great, as you said, entryway into venture. It's because like when you think about the skills you need in a company to be great at product, they're not that dissimilar from what you need in order to be an effective venture capitalist. And so, you know, number one is like, you have to be, actually, like as a PM, you have to be really analytical, a good communicator, because you're like putting product docs together. You're trying to get other people on your team to see the vision you see for what you want to build, and then like convince them that that's the right thing to do. Or like, you know, shuck and jive with them and figure out like, okay, you're right, that I wasn't thinking about that, like let's get there. And so you're kind of doing this like iterative process, but a lot of the time, like you're the one that's determining the vision through people's input, but then at the end of the day, determining the vision and like trying to reflect the company strategy back into what you guys are going to build, and then you're affecting that change. But because you as a product manager actually typically don't have anybody on the engineering or design side reporting to you, and you have to get the CEO or the head of product to agree with what you want to build, you have to just be really good at persuasion and influence and communication in a way that without having any direct controls. When you think about venture, like, you know, venture, like, first of all, I'm having to meet with companies, and then I have to figure out like, do I believe in the like their vision, and like, and often that maps to my own views on the space. But then I have to like convince people internally at Greylock, hey, I think this is a great investment. In the same way that I would have said to Ben at Pinterest, hey, I think this is like the right thing, the right product thing to build. Like the way that you kind of say like I believe in this investment or we should build this product is actually the same. It's like, what are your hypotheses? How do you think things are gonna like evolve in the space? You're like the data supporting that. And like where you go from there is different, but like that like mindset is very similar. And then like you have to affect change at the company sometimes without really having direct control. It's not like I can tell the CEO what to do. Like the CEO, it's his or her company. And really you're just trying to persuade them or think through a problem together in a way that's quite similar to being in product.
Yeah, and I want to get to kind of broader career advice before going even more specific in your time at Greylock and your goals there. One, so first off, how did you get the Bessemer gig coming from a philosophy major?
Yeah. I think like for me it was, so in college, I had the most random job experiences. Like, I mentioned I was selling ads. I realized I was great at selling ads. So I would sell ads to local businesses for like any publication I could get my hands on. Like, there was like the stupidest thing I ever did was there was one company that had these dry erase boards, and like the amount of white space was like this big. And then I sold ads all around the perimeter. So it was like the worst product ever. But like what I just realized was like, okay, I know all these local businesses now because I sold once to them. And so I could just keep on selling to them different products. And the same thing, like starting this general contracting business, like I just would go door to door and like knock on people's doors and like sell them on letting me paint their house or like, you know, fix their roofing, whatever it was. And so that type of background was like so random. Like I never applied to McKinsey, but I'm sure if I did, they'd be like, what is this person doing? But it turned out that that was like the analyst job in a venture firm is all about cold calling startups. Like, I don't know if any of you guys are founders. I'm sure Product Hunt probably gets these emails. Like, you know, the junior person cold calling a CEO, that's exactly the same as me trying to sell ads to a local business. And so I had this incredibly random like work experience that was not a fit for any other job besides like a VC analyst job or like being in part of a company. And so that's how it all worked out.
And how did you convince them?
Well, I think that I just convinced them by showing, number one, that I wasn't I was just fucking persistent. Like I was going to get on the phone with any of these founders or email them constantly and just do whatever I needed to do to get on the phone with great companies. So I think that's like what you look for when you're hiring for that role. And then number two, like that I was just a smart learner and that I was going to do whatever I needed to do to learn technology, even though it wasn't actually part of my any of my experiences.
And then from Bessemer to you know, this idea of getting on a rocket ship no matter what seat it is, you agree with that philosophy?
I absolutely do. I mean, look, there's caveats to it. You have to feel aligned with the culture, and you have to trust the judgment of the CEO and founders. Because, you know, in the company you realize how important the CEO is, because the CEO is making decisions constantly. And if you don't believe in the CEO's ability to make the right judgment calls there, then you're just gonna spin out. And so I think like if you have an opportunity to join a rocket ship and you feel aligned with the culture and you feel aligned with the like the judgment of the CEO and the founders, then absolutely go for it. You can't go wrong.
So the two kind of questions to get nuance at this philosophy is, one, when is it too late to join a rocket ship? When do you optimize to join the rocket ship? And maybe it's as early as possible. But the second question is, how do you identify a potential, you know, what do you look for in a potential rocket ship? How does one know that it's...
If I could answer that question, I will become Midas List number one. I'll attempt. So number one, like, when is it too late? I don't know the answer to that. So I've met people who joined Google when it was like 1,000 to 5,000 people. And obviously like they just had incredible experiences, right? Like they learned so much and they got to like, you know, they spent 4 years and they saw it go from like, you know, 1x to 10x, you know, like it's just like an incredible opportunity. And so I think for people like joining Uber now, like sure the company is big, but wow, I just feel like there's so much more that can happen there, and there's so much that you'll learn that I don't know if there's ever a too late. I think that you do become more sensitive to what the role is, the bigger the company is, because you just want to make sure that you're going to be positioned in a part of the org that is growing quickly. That's like important, because you know, like when I joined Pinterest and it was about 30 people, we barely had an org chart. Like we kind of all reported to Ben. Like it was just like it was just very different. Whereas I see, you know, when I left Pinterest and it was about, you know, 650 people, when you get into a role, you have opportunities to go up in that role. Like you're going to have growth opportunities more so than a later stage company, but like moving around in roles becomes harder. So I think picking the right part of the organization becomes more important. In terms of like picking the ones, I think it's hard. It's really hard to know, but there are a few things that you should you should be asking companies when you meet with them. Number one is, of course, like just kind of user growth, looking at things like App Annie to see where the company ranks. I actually look at Google Trends to see how people, like whether searches for a particular brand are growing. And then three, like, look, you know, you don't want to, VCs can be, we can make pretty bad decisions, but it's often a pretty good signal if either a strong VC has recently invested or there is financing momentum. And like, look, this is a very noisy signal, but it's worth looking for. Again, it depends on what stage of the company though you'd be joining.
So you say Uber is not too late. So something like Slack is definitely not too late.
Oh my God, right. Like Slack. I mean, it feels like there's so much more that can happen from where Slack is right now. But yeah, like I think it could be a really, I mean, talk about an exciting company.
Yeah, I love Slack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When people tell me like what's the newest cool thing, I still say Slack.
Really?
It's not new.
Yeah, it's great. I think there's so much, and like great founder, great culture. Oh, yeah. Like there's just a lot of goodness there.
Before getting specifics of VC, you know, you had a relationship with Greylock, or Greylock reached out, mm-hmm. but you could have had your seat at, you know, a number of different excellent venture firms. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Greylock's one of the best. But how did you think about it? Was it just you had the relationship? Let's go. Did you shop a little bit? Did you take us through that?
Yeah. So when I was at Pinterest, I was kind of like this, I hate to use the word unicorn because it's obviously means more now, but I was like this person who, like when venture firms were thinking like, oh, we want to bring on a new partner, a new consumer partner, like what are we looking for? And it'd be like, oh, it'd be great if they had prior venture experience. Like, oh, if they have prior venture experience that with some good investments, that's even better. And oh, it'd be awesome if they had like product experience at a hot consumer company. And so as you can imagine, I was like one of these rare people that like checked all the boxes. And so there were a lot of firms that I got to know. And none of them though, like none of them made me feel like I wanted to leave Pinterest. Like I loved Pinterest. Like it's just an incredible company. But then what happened is like, you know, Greylock reached out to me. It's funny, they played me so well. They were like, I would, for all these VCs, I'd be like, look, thank you for reaching out. I'm not interested in leaving Pinterest. And they'd all be like, totally get it. Like when you're ready to leave, just reach out to us. We'd love to have the conversation. I was like, okay, great. And then Greylock was like, totally get it, but hey, do you want to meet like Reid Hoffman or you know, David C or like John Lilly or any of the people? And you just kind of like, I'm not going to say no to meeting with like anybody on the Greylock team, right? Like it's this incredible group of people. And then you meet with the people there and you realize what an incredible group of people it is. And it's like, to me, like what I realized I was looking for was number one, like, I want to be like a great investor. I want to be one of the best. And so it helps a lot to be working with the best. The second thing was though that I didn't want to just be an investor. I really wanted to be like a great board member. Like I kind of see my KPI as what percentage of companies that I invest in will I be the first person that the CEO thinks to call when something happens. And I felt like Greylock stood in a class of its own in terms of thinking actively about working on behalf of the companies, being a great board member. It just made me feel like I would learn that from the Greylock team in a very special way. And there was another thing, which was like for me, culture. Like I am very bad with assholes. Like I just don't. I wish I had more arrogance, but I don't. And so I find that like I just have a hard time working in places where that is part of the culture. And there's just none of that at all at Greylock. Like it's a super smart, unassuming group of people that just want to like help and learn and make great investments. And so there was something that felt very special about the fit for me with Greylock. That I realized that for me, Greylock was the only firm that would get me to leave Pinterest. That's really how I felt. And so, I mean, don't get me wrong, I anguished over the decision. It was a very hard decision to leave, but ultimately realized that it was just one of these things that I couldn't say no to. And so I pulled the trigger.
Yeah. And you know, you're at something that's fantastic, but evaluating other opportunities, it's a very delicate situation, obviously. You know, there's this one saying, I think it's in relationships, which start, that you're only as faithful as your options. Like, does that relate to, you know, the converse of when to join a rocket ship, but also when to leave? And what are your thoughts there as you advise, you know, younger people, you know?
And what was the saying? You're only as what as your options?
Faithful as your options.
Huh. So I think that the number one advice I give to people is that a lot of people will say like, hey, you know, I'm thinking of leaving Pinterest, or I'm thinking of leaving this company, or, you know, maybe I'll do a company, maybe I'll join another company, maybe I'll do VC. Like, and there's always this kind of theoretical conversation. My advice always is like, in order to make a decision whether or not you want to stay at the company, you have to see whether there are tangible opportunities outside the company that will get you to that excite you enough that you want to make the change. And so, like, I think like I've seen this a lot where people will say, like, even, you know, people at Pinterest will be like, I'm thinking of leaving, you know, I'm hitting my 4 years soon, blah, blah, blah. And I'll be like, well, do you want to leave just because you're hitting, like, what are the reasons behind, like, do you want to leave just because you think you should leave because you're hitting your 4 years? Like, you know, so like getting down into the real reasons why someone's thinking of leaving. Because I think you shouldn't leave somewhere because you think you should. You like, I've heard people be like, oh, you know, I don't want to be one of those people who worked at a company for 6 years. Like, why not? That's like an incredible thing to do. So that's number one. And then number two is like, okay, well, make something tangible. Like, see whether you will get excited enough about another opportunity that it'll make you want to make the move. But I think for some reason, like, people think that it's like looks bad to be in a company for a long time, which to me is the silliest thing. Like, there are the opportunities that you get when you're in a company for several years is just completely different. Like, your impact, I feel like I started to be most impactful at Pinterest, like, or not just me, actually, I should say people become much, like, so much more impactful at Pinterest or any company after they've been there for really a year. Right. Cause you've like know all the players, you have the institutional knowledge. And so to like then leave before, like, you can imagine that it's like this exponential curve, I think, of your impact as you become more and more established in the company, you have more and more institutional history. And so for people to leave as they're starting to be most impactful, that's silly, but you just have to, make it tangible.
After a few years of Pinterest, you said you wanted to be a great investor. Why be a great investor? Why would that over being a great operator and starting your own thing?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, for me, this is very personal, which is that I want to do what I'm going to be best at. And for some reason, I think this is what I'll be best at. Like, I think that this is what, this is where I can have as the most impact, and be the most effective. And so that's what it came down for me. And I also feel like venture, though, is the type of thing where no one's good at it out of the gates. There's a saying that it takes $100 million to train a VC. I actually don't think it's that dour, but it is, like, when you look at the most successful investors, I mean, gosh, like, look at Bill Gerlich. He's obviously been an incredible investor, but probably his best investment ever was Uber. And this guy's been doing this for how long? Like, so, right. You know, you have VC, like, people used to think of VC as something that you do later in your career. And I actually think that's no longer the case. I think that the best investors start doing VC much earlier in their career than has historically been the case. And so I just felt like if I want to be the best, I just got to get started doing it. That's kind of what catalyzed it also.
Cool. So you've been at Greylock for a few months.
Yep.
You're now in, you know, transitioning from operator mindset to investor mindset. you want to be a great investor, you want to be, you know, one of the best, the best. What's the education of a VC like? You know, take us through how you are trying to, you know, to be the best investor you can be, and what you're trying to learn and who you're learning it from.
It's a great question. By the way, I'm like, I feel like this podcast is going to come to haunt me now that I've publicly declared my desire to be the best. But look, that's just who I am. I'm a pretty competitive person. I just want to always strive to be better. So in terms of like how you learn, like honestly, I mean, gosh, venture has the longest freaking learning, like feedback cycles out of like just about anything. Like, and so you have to, like, if you're going to try to do it by yourself, you're going to make so many mistakes and you're like, it's so easy to make mistakes. It's like the velocity of making mistakes is faster than your velocity of learning in some ways, because you don't really know whether your investment was good or bad for like 5 years, if not more. Mm-hmm. And so the way to bootstrap that learning is to work with an investor who has already gone through the learning curve and has been doing it for 10, 15 years. And then you have someone who already has this patterns, already has the learnings, and you can talk with them.
And so with that, is that Josh Ellman? Is that John Lilly? And I want to make a brief analogy, actually. I'm curious, like, if we compare it to poker, for example, you know, and I was sitting with the World Series champion of poker, and him or her was explaining to me their process, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I can learn a ton, but at the end of the day, is it kind of like poker? And maybe I'm just not giving poker enough credit.
You mean is the process of investing poker?
No, just in terms of the like luck involved, you know, is it expertise
I think it's actually a pretty good analogy in some ways, because poker is, I mean, look, people who play poker say it's a game of skill, right?
Right.
But at the same time, there's sometimes the last card in the flop, and you're like, I just got it on the river, right? Like you just got so fucking lucky. Like the statistics were against you and you got so lucky, right? And there are definitely companies where you're just flabbergasted that like they got acquired for something. You know, like there are times when a company gets acquired and it was like it just takes off and you kind of can't predict sometimes. Like it feels like you can't predict. But then at the same time, like that you look at some investors who are just so fucking good at it, and they figure out the right moment to invest in a company, that it makes you feel like it's not just luck. And it's definitely not just luck. I mean, it is such an art. It is so hard to be good at investing. And if you are hoping to get lucky, you're screwed. Like if you're hoping to get lucky, or you're just like, hey, it could work, someone will want to buy this. Oh my God, that is a bad path. And so it's kind of like if you were a poker player, like hoping to get lucky on the river, like you're going to lose your money.
What makes a great board member? Like what skills does one need? What's the, you know, ideal board member?
Yeah. So number one is do no harm. And there are so many board members who just by following do no harm would be more effective board members. But you see do no harm. You see investors doing harm when they try to micromanage the company, or they don't trust the CEO, or they put their interests way too far ahead of the company's interests when it comes to transactions or financings, et cetera. So there is number one, do no harm. But then I think there's like probably two places. There is number one, okay, day-to-day operating of the business. Like how can a board member help? And I think that there's like a bunch of ways where a board member can be valuable there. There's helping to recruit. There's like helping to sell new people that the company is talking to on like, you know, closing them. There is figuring out like strategic introductions you can make. And then there's just like the day-to-day of like talking with the founder, working with the founder, asking questions, being a truth seeker, like to make sure that the founder doesn't have blind spots and also isn't too much in the weed, that they're picking themselves up. So there's like, there's a lot of coaching and just help you can do to remove roadblocks. And then I think like another huge, huge, huge part of the investor, like a great board member, is maximizing some of the most important moments for a company, which is financing and exits, right? So, you know, oftentimes like, you know, VCs, we're deal makers, right? Like we're doing deals all the time. And so oftentimes a founder like should only go through a financing process, you know, a handful or two times in their entire careers, right? And so if a VC can add value during those important moments, that's incredibly valuable. And then lastly, like when it actually comes to the exit of the company, whether that's thinking about like M&A strategy and maximizing that, or thinking about, you know, timing for a public offering, I feel like an investor, a great board member, should be able to add a lot of value in those like incredibly crucial moments.
And how important is marketing today for VC? Like being out there, you know, the bounce, you know, Andreessen Horowitz coming out on the scene just in a couple of years, but also, you know, some people are, you know, Sequoia or Benchmark a bit more reserved. Where's your stance on how important it is today, and where's your stance on where you personally?
It is so important. I mean, it's become like when I started at Bessemer, which was in 2006, you know, it was just a different world. There are very few investors that were blogging, very few firms that had a marketing person. You know, it is just different. And now look, like companies, especially companies that are growing quickly, have so many choices. Like it used to be that a company growing quickly in the Valley had maybe a handful of people that they like should talk to. And now there's like so many amazing investors in the Valley. And so if you want to be the person that someone thinks about when they're looking to raise money, you have to get your name out there. You have to be someone that people think about or feel like they want to work with. And people do that with blogging. Like I wrote a blog post actually that blogging is like the freemium model of venture. That we're kind of like, it's like the 5 gigabyte free, you know, Dropbox offering where you're like, hey, like here's a taste of how I think. And if you want more, like, you know, let's talk. Like that's what an investment is. And I think that's the way the VC game is now. And I think it's so great. Like to me, I actually think it creates a lot of transparency. It like makes it so that it's not as much of a rich get richer effect for investors. You know, like there are so many established names in venture as and the people that you would think about, like, you know, John Doerr, like Bill Gurley, et cetera. But there are a lot of great up and coming people too. And the way that, you know, someone like a Mark Sister who basically came out of nowhere and was just like a blogging machine and got so much brand equity from doing that. He's a great investor now, and he was able to like leap ahead because he was so good at marketing. And so I think it's a really important thing. It's probably, I also think being a great blogger is the most overvalued skill in VC. The fact that you're good at blogging doesn't mean that you're going to be a great board member or a great investor. But it ends up being pretty important and pretty valuable.
So how do you think about it for yourself in terms of getting your, is it you're going to start blogging more actively? Yeah. You know, is it like being at all the main events? Like, how do you think about, because you're just getting back into it, you know, becoming a name that everyone thinks about, you know, besides doing such illustrious things like
content? Exactly. No, I definitely like, I actually love blogging. Like to me, you know, the thing I miss about being in a company is shipping. Like you, in a company, like you always, like you're driving towards something like shipping a product, and it feels so tangible. And when you ship something, you're just like, yes, it's out there, like on to the next. And for me, blogging is like the same feeling, of like, I have an idea, I'm clarifying it, writing it, and then shipping it. And it has the added benefit that it starts to get your name out there. So it's something that, you know, I've got to get my act together a little bit more, get more of a routine there. But like, that's something I really want to do. Events are great too. As an investor, especially a new, you know, the new person at a firm, you want to just get out there and have people think about you. And events can be quite valuable that way. But I don't know which one's more important, blogging or events. I'd be if people had feedback there, I'm totally open to it.
Let's talk about gender briefly. It's something that there's been a lot going on in terms of, you know, the lack of women in prominent positions at VC firms, and you haven't talked a ton about it, and maybe that's by design. I'm just curious what you make of it, and maybe there's, you know, you don't want to talk about it, I don't want to put you in the spot, but just what are your thoughts just in general as to how you view it in your own life and also just the broader context?
Yeah, so like I was going to make some joke about like, didn't you see this is one of the things that we're not supposed to talk about? But I'm just totally kidding. So like, look, like, you know, when I joined Bessemer, I was the only woman. And when I joined Greylock, I was like the first woman, like first female partner. So like, it's something that I definitely think about. And like, you know, it wasn't for me, like for me personally, I actually thought that being a woman was a pretty big disadvantage until I did the deal for Pinterest. And that was the first time where I realized that actually I bring like a very unique perspective to the table. And having a different, like when you're investing, you're always looking for, you know, your unfair advantage, like your edge. And I realized like, holy crap, like for me, if I'm looking at consumer companies, I'm going to have a different perspective on those companies than most other people, especially just, you know, because like we're just different. And so I like started to realize like what an advantage it is for me. And I think that sometimes like, I think that people are realizing that diversity, whether it's gender or race or like, you know, origin, is very similar, right? Like we, you know, you make better decisions when you have people, like at Pinterest, like a big value for us was this thing called knitting, which was really collaboration. And we just believe that when you bring people from different disciplines together to solve a problem, you're going to get to a better decision, a better outcome than if like, it's like the same people solving for the problem. And I just think diversity in general is like the same thing. And I use diversity kind of very broadly in this like kind of perspectives way of approaching it. And so I think that, you know, well, I personally don't talk about diversity a lot because I just kind of keep my head down and I just want to kick ass and then be a great example that way. But it's definitely something that I'm happy that the conversation's happening now in the Valley, at least.
I'm going to ask rapid fire questions. You don't have to have rapid fire answers. You know, you're from New York. If you're an entrepreneur, do you need to be in San Francisco? You know, can you do it? Like, is that the recommendation? Can you do it from New York, from LA, or just move to San Francisco?
I'm super biased here. I think Silicon Valley is a global maxima.
Is there anyone in the VC world that you envy? Not because of their success, but just for a skill that they have that you wish you had.
You know, my colleague Josh Ellman is freaking incredible at knowing everybody in the Valley. He is just in the flow. Like everybody I speak to is like, oh, I'm like best friends with Josh. And like, you know that when everybody's best friends with Josh, like there's just something special that he's able to do. And so I am watching him. I'm like, how does he do it? Like, how can I learn?
How does he do it? How is he so good?
I have no idea. Like, it's amazing.
Well, one, I just know he takes meetings all day long and he's just super helpful. He's always like texting. I mean, he's just super helpful.
Yeah.
It's just his personality a little bit.
It's great.
Yeah. What advice would you give to your 25-year-old self?
So 25 is when I was at Bessemer. Moved to Silicon Valley earlier.
Mm-hmm. Where were you?
I was in New York. I was at Bessemer 5 years in New York.
And explain that out a bit more, just because the nucleus of everything that's happening is here?
Yeah, I just, you know, I really do believe that the companies going after the biggest opportunities are here. And by being here, you maximize your chances of going, like, becoming one of the biggest companies. And so, like, I believe, like, first of all, Silicon Valley, like, I love living in San Francisco. I'm a New Yorker, but, like, I just adore San Francisco, despite the lack of public transportation, which is a huge, huge pain in the butt. But so, like, I love living here. And I believe that, like, if you're an actress, you want to be in LA. And I think if you want to build your career in tech, like, you should be here.
There's
some caveat to that. I kind of say that, like, if you're in New York, if you're doing a fintech company or, you know, a fashion company and you're in New York, like, ad tech company, like, there's so many categories where, like, it makes so much sense to be in New York. Similarly, like, if you're doing a content company, like, or there's so many other categories, like, being in LA makes sense. Like, there's a lot of nuance to that argument, but overall, I think Silicon Valley is the best place.
What's something that you used to fundamentally believe that you now see as misguided?
Meritocracy.
Oh, we got it. Okay. Please elaborate on that.
I mean, look, like, my view was always like, oh, if I just work really hard and I, like, do the best work, like, I'm going to be recognized for that and, like, I'll, like, succeed. It's kind of like, I just viewed life as like, if I get the highest grade on my exam, I'll be the best student. But actually, like, there's so much other stuff that comes into play. There's so much subjectivity that I think that a meritocracy is, like, it's an aspiration, but I think that our belief that we have it is misguided.
And how would you recommend that people understand the other stuff, which is very important?
Yeah, I mean, I think awareness is just huge. Like, people, you know, becoming aware of our biases, our unconscious biases, makes a huge, huge difference. And there's a lot of great stuff happening on that side.
Who comes to mind when you first hear the term fulfilled? Like, someone who lives a fulfilled life that you want to emulate?
Oh, wow, that's an intense question, Eric. I guess I think about my mom.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
I mean, she's just like, she's this incredible person who's so loving and, you know, like, five kids and painting and, like, kind of, you know, she's just, I just feel like she's a happy, fulfilled person. It's like, wow. I would love to be her age, you know, and look back on my life and feel the same way that she should feel about hers.
That's fascinating. And this balance between, like, being a great investor and success in your personal life, professional life, but also, you know, having the life that you want to have personally. What do you want people to say at your funeral? Now that this podcast is
mortality. Wow, you just go for it. What do I want people to say at my funeral? That I guess I was a loving and loved person.
That's good. That's a good note to end on as well. Before that, where can people find out, you know, more about you online? Where can people find out more about Greylock, what you're up to, any plugs for upcoming things? And then if you have any advice and or an ask of the products and audience, a lot of the founders, entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs and investors.
Well, so the easiest place to find me is on Twitter. And I link to either my Greylock bio or, and actually on greylock.com's website, if you look at my bio, I actually have my email address listed there. So feel free to drop me a note or connect on Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever.
You're about to get flooded.
I can't guarantee quick responses, but my job now is to meet with awesome founders and find, like, the next great companies. And so that is, if you are someone who you know who's super talented and working on something interesting, you know where to find me. Mm-hmm. I'm consumer, perfect. Series A, Series B.
And any advice or an ask of the product and audience as they, you know, want to be founders, want to be investors?
Oh, any advice on founders? Oh, God, it's hard to give some generic stuff there, but tweet at me at Twitter and I'll follow up.
Perfect. And I just want to give a big shout out to you. Thank you for coming. So,
Thank you guys for joining me for this.
well, it's fascinating because your Twitter photo is the most intense photo of you playing lacrosse. You're
Rugby.
both
Rugby.
rugby, my mistake. Both
It's
intensely,
muscles, you got it.
both intensely competitive, but also very kind and funny.
Thanks.
And you probably, I think you have the most blab points of any podcast ever. You have 100 times more than I do nearly. So that is
Okay, good.
the indicator. Usually
It's
it's about equal.
sympathy for all my coughing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sarah.
Right, thanks you guys. Great to meet
Have a
you
great
all.
day. We'll see you.
Bye.
Bye.